You're listening to the David Medeiros Show on 94.3 FM, The Talker.
Welcome back, folks. This half hour brought to you by Grand Rental Station. You can rent the equipment and keep the advice. Renting saves you time, money, and hassle because you don't have to maintain the equipment. Go to grsrental.com, grsrental.com for all your rental needs. Rent the equipment and keep the advice. Right now, I'm so excited because we have on the line a recent but very good friend of mine, Cynthia Farahat. She was part of the movement in Egypt in the early days of the Arab Spring when it was a secular movement, before it was taken over by the Muslim Brotherhood, who was supported by our president, Barack Obama. And she has been, I've been following very closely her posts on her Facebook page and encouraging you to as well, as she's been giving us the story, the real story on what's going on there in Egypt. And it's very interesting. On the top of her Facebook page, she has a picture of Tahrir Square, and there is a giant lighted sign on one of the buildings there in Tahrir Square that says, "It is not a coup." Cynthia, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, David. Always a pleasure.
Cynthia, you featured this idea, and I know you've written extensively about this idea that it's not a coup. We tend to think of this as a coup because we see the military stepping in to what is, by all accounts, in our media, a democratically elected president and taking him out of office. What do we have wrong about that?
First thing is that Mohamed Morsi was not a president. He was not elected. It was illegal to begin with for a prison escapee to run for president, let alone be in office. I have written several pieces with Dr. Daniel Pipes that prove that Mohamed Morsi was indeed installed and not elected. So what's happening right now is that people are trying to get back what they lost during the installation, after the installation of Mohamed Morsi. When you have over 30 million people taking the streets to overthrow an Islamist terrorist government, terrorist regime, and an entity like the International Muslim Brotherhood Organization, the military had absolutely no other option but to step in, especially that on June 30th, the Muslim Brotherhood declared a mass war against all of Egyptians. If you think that jihad can be the worst thing, there's even something that is so much worse, and it's called Nafir. It's N-A-F-I-R, and it literally translates to mass flight. But the only modern usage of the word is in context of Islamic war theology, meaning absolute war, total war against every single Egyptian, regardless of their gender, their religion, and their age, or their race. So that was a very dangerous declaration. Even the followers of the Muslim Brotherhood announced that they are going to establish a Taliban-style state. The military had to intervene, and if it had not intervened, it would have been a treasonous military. And we cannot call it a coup, especially that they did not come to power. And currently, the person that is in charge is the president of the Supreme Constitutional Court. So right now, there's actually in power a civilian government and not a military one. So that's why we cannot call it a coup.
Cynthia, when we look at this and we look at it from our perspective, and you've just explained very clearly why it isn't a coup and what the issues were involved, this would be, because of Morsi's actions once he got in office, this would be like them completely rewriting our Constitution and just saying, no, we're throwing that out and we're going a different direction and doing so, as you pointed out, in a terroristic fashion. Is this why the Egyptian people rose up in such strong opposition to Morsi?
Precisely, and that the Muslim Brotherhood were absolutely terrified. We have to keep in account something. The numbers are very important. In 8 years, the Muslim Brotherhood organization were only able to recruit 600,000 official members. In 2 months, since March, since the beginning of March, the movement Tamarud, which translates to rebellion, was able to get signatures of 22 million people that oppose his Islamist terrorist regime. So the Muslim Brotherhood were absolutely frightened. In 80 years, they could only get 600,000, and in 2 months, the movement rebellion got 22 million. So this is one of the biggest blows to Islamic theocracy on planet Earth that happened in recent history. It's one of the biggest blows to the biggest Sunni terrorist organization on the planet, especially that its headquarters are in Egypt, and Egyptians feel incredibly betrayed that their allies in the West are not standing by them when instead they're standing with a terrorist entity.
One of the things that I've seen from the pictures that are not showing up on CNN is that there are a lot of signs there that are anti-Obama and frankly anti-American media, especially CNN, because of the lack of reporting of the things that you just told us.
Yes, CNN is called all the time on Egyptian on social media, on Egyptian television, that it's the mouthpiece for the Islamic organization and for terrorists, especially that they're only covering the microscopic group that is protesting pro-Morsi, and they are ignoring the millions in Tahrir Square and in every major square, in every major city, or even every street across Egypt, while they're also ignoring the war in Sinai. The Muslim Brotherhood and Jamaat Islamiyah terrorist group and the Takfir and Hijra and Al-Qaeda are taking control of northern Sinai and declaring official war. And there has been several terrorist attacks and an attempt to blow up an airport in northern Sinai. Yet all media is ignoring their activities. They're ignoring that they're killing children and throwing them on top of buildings when they participate in the protests. Yet, they're focusing on the microscopic group of supporters of Mohamed Morsi. So, of course, there is a lot of disappointment for U.S. foreign policy and mainstream media, especially CNN.
Cynthia, what does it look like in terms of, again, the numbers are pretty impressive, 22 million signatures in just a couple of weeks for the rebellion, much like, it clearly is a citizen uprising, in spite of the official policy of the U.S. government and for the most part, our mainstream media. Are the Egyptians hopeful about this round of the Arab Spring and that they're going to be able to, that they're the people of Egypt are more aware of the agenda of the Muslim Brotherhood and that another election will not lead to a similar result?
It would lead to a similar result if it happens fast. And that is why President Obama's administration keeps pushing that there has to be an election very fast. We will not have an election fast. We will first have a constitution and then a parliament, and then we will start with the presidential elections to give the secularists time to organize.
You know, this is exactly what we did after the first Arab Spring. We pushed hard for a quick election. The Muslim Brotherhood, having already had an organization in place, was able to organize much faster than the secularists, and we got a terrible outcome.
And that's exactly what they want to do again. And we were not organized, and people like us, because we were the ones who were actually banned for the past 60 years, not the Muslim Brotherhood. Even the terrorist strategist of the MB officially said that they were never banned under Mubarak and they had absolute freedom to practice their political and terrorist ideology. And that is the truth on the street. Mubarak used to say in English that it's banned and used to give them everything in Arabic that they wanted. So we were the ones who were actually banned. Trying to organize after being dismantled for six decades will take time. And that's why the Egyptians, as much as they're happy because they defeated one of the worst organizations in the world, they're also very apprehensive whenever the international community keeps pressuring for elections to hand it back to the terrorists, and it's never going to happen again. They need to establish this idea that the prison, the escaped prisoner, Mohamed Morsi, is going indeed to return back to the prison that he escaped from because he's illegitimate and illegal.
Now, where is he right now?
Right now, no one knows, but he is he's sort of in house arrest and by the Egyptian Republican Guard or Presidential Guard and also the military. So we don't know exactly where he is, but members of the Muslim Brotherhood, like Mohammed al-Biltagi, who is also a member of the parliament for the Brotherhood, stated that the mass terrorist attacks across Egypt and Sinai will not stop until he's reinstalled in power. So we don't know where he is, but certainly causing a lot of disasters.
Well, our thoughts and prayers are with the people of Egypt, and again, as I've said to you many times before, I and for many Americans apologize to you for our government's stand on this situation and their inability to recognize and act in a way that is in the interest of the Egyptian people and in the Egyptian of the rights of conscience and freedom and peaceful government, peaceful self-government. And our thoughts and prayers continue to be with you and the Egyptian people who are not certainly not taking this lying down, but organizing themselves and standing up for their own freedom.
Thank you so much, Dave. But that's also a benefit for the whole world, because this is one of the worst terrorist organizations in the world. So it's in our best interest and yours. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Folks, it's Cynthia Farahat giving us the latest in Egypt. This is information you're not hearing in the mainstream media. Cynthia was involved in the beginnings of the Arab Spring, and she continues to be a reliable source as well as a reliable source and predictor of what's going on in Egypt. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
He's a recovering politician, and this is his therapy. David Madeira on 94.3 FM, The Talker. You're listening to the David Madeira Show. Call now on 94.3 FM, The Talker.
And for you math experts out there, give us a call at 8 cubed 5 7 squared 4 squared 8 7. That's the number to call.
Ouch.
8 cubed 5 7 squared 4 squared 8 7.
Math is hard.
Math is hard. Here is, just for context, here is the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, back in 2009, talking about the Muslim Brotherhood.
Speak briefly to the Muslim Brotherhood as an international movement, and then I'll ask Director Mueller to speak specifically to it here domestically. And the reason I do that, of course, is because this is the Muslim Brotherhood is prominent in what's going on now in Egypt and elsewhere in the Mideast. The term Muslim Brotherhood is an umbrella term for a variety of movements.
Right.
In the case of Egypt, a very heterogeneous group, largely secular, which has eschewed violence and has decried Al-Qaeda as a perversion of Islam.
Right.
They have pursued social ends, betterment of the political order in Egypt, et cetera.
I mean, it's just stunningly, ridiculously ignorant. Ridiculously ignorant. The Daily Brett blog, July 7th, yesterday, or 2 days ago, Sunday, he posted an article from a friend of his, an Egyptian in Alexandria, and it gives you some perspective on this. He basically takes the story of Morsi and he translates it into terms that we can understand. And I want to share this with you because it puts it in perspective. June 30th, 2012. Imagine if what happened in Egypt is happening here. Barack Obama wins the election with 51.7%. Takes the oath and is sworn into office. 5 months go by, makes no decisions except maybe some presidential pardons of some convicted terrorists, including some who were convicted for their role in the assassination of a former U.S. president. And then, on November 21st, 2012, and again, this is what happened in Egypt, but we're using American terms so that we can get our heads around it. President Obama issues a presidential decree giving himself sweeping powers. This is exactly what Morsi did on November 21st, 2012. Basically says that any future decrees he makes are uncontestable in any court, and therefore his decisions are akin to the word of God. His new laws, any laws that he passed, are the new Bible. And this is what Morsi did. And the parallels are chilling because as we think about Obamacare and last Tuesday and then Friday, just changing the rules, just saying, well, you know what? We've decided not to enforce that portion of the law. Nationwide protests erupt as a result of his decree, and 1.5 million people organize a sit-in at the White House to peacefully request that he rescind this order. Obama's Democrat Party supporters actually attack the peaceful sit-in outside the White House with guns and shoot and kill five of the peaceful protesters. Again, this is what happened in Egypt, but in American terms so that we can understand the scale and scope of this. Then, a few weeks later, President Obama dissolves the U.S. Supreme Court and labels them traitors to America. And a week later, he fires the U.S. District Attorney and appoints a Democrat, somebody from his own party, to replace him. Again, this is what, if you want to think about what's going on in Egypt in the terms that we can understand, in terms of our government, this is what happened. A month later, he annuls the Constitution and forms a constitutional committee to draft a new constitution, a committee which includes no Republicans, independents, Muslims, or Jews, and only a handful of women. Primarily, it's made up of Democrats and religious preachers. He has a referendum not supervised by any judicial branch, and the constitution, which they just drafted in violation of the existing constitution, narrowly wins, and President Obama ratifies it the very next morning, despite it having gotten only 18% approval among all Americans. Again, this is what is going on in Egypt right now, if it was in American terms. Within a month, he invites top global terrorists, known jihadists, and al-Qaeda members from all over the world to rally in Yankee Stadium, where he cuts ties with and declares war on Canada. During this period of time, the U.S. economy is sinking, the stock market's collapsing, foreign investment has stopped, tourism has died, electricity, fuel, and water shortages are a daily occurrence, unemployment doubled, and the dollar has lost 20% of its value globally. This is the American equivalent of what's going on in Egypt. And if you're just joining us, we had at the beginning of this hour Cynthia Farahat, an Egyptian freedom fighter who is now here in the United States with the Middle East Forum, giving us an update on what's going on in Egypt and explaining why it is not a coup. What is going on in Egypt is a restoration of the rule of law. Morsi essentially made himself a dictator. He was democratically elected, as was Adolf Hitler. And then he made himself a dictator, and his party, the Muslim Brotherhood, declared war on the Egyptian people. 22 million people signed a recall petition for Morsi. And the military, at the behest of the people of Egypt, has stepped in and pushed for and received a deposing, essentially, of Morsi. So very compelling report from Cynthia Farahat. If you missed it, why not go to thedms.us, 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 and sign up for our free daily email. You'll get links to all of the stories we've talked about today, including the one I just read, links to the podcasts, and all of the information about today's show, not just so you can go back and listen to it, but also so that you can share the truth with other people. Because, folks, you are the new media. So why is it so hard for me to shut my mouth and let you speak? Why do I feel the need to always keep on talking? Well, I know I need to hear from you. I know what I have got to do. Find what I've been missing. Yeah. I gotta learn to listen.
The David Madeira Show. On 94.3 FM, The Talker.
Welcome back, folks. 888-577-4487. Our ongoing coverage this morning of the situation in Egypt, trying to give you some perspective that you're not seeing in the mainstream media. According to the Jerusalem Post, diplomatic sources in Israel say that they expect Obama to back Egypt's army in its effort to stabilize the country. I don't know whether that is just the kind of thing that governments put out for public consumption, or whether that is in fact what they expect. The Israeli government expects, according to this Jerusalem Post story, U.S. President Barack Obama to avoid pursuing the same, quote, naive policies in its dealings with the post-Mohamed Morsi Egypt as he did in his handling of the crisis that brought down Hosni Mubarak, a senior official, told Israeli radio. Jerusalem, which made no secret of its displeasure with Obama for what government officials believe was his abandonment of a key ally, is hopeful that the U.S. will back the military's efforts to stabilize the country after millions took to the streets demanding and receiving the ouster of Morsi, Mubarak's Islamic successor. According to the government source, Obama's naivete led him to engage in dialogue with the Muslim Brotherhood and pave the way for the downfall of Mubarak. And I would ask the question, was it naivete? Was it? Could it possibly be called naivete when Bloomberg reports on July 6th that the Obama administration called for a, quote, inclusive political process in Egypt with a role for the Muslim Brotherhood? Violent protest in Cairo and elsewhere over the military's ouster of President Mohamed Morsi. And we've heard from Cynthia Farahat earlier in this hour about where those protests are coming from. The violent ones raise doubts about prospects for an eventual accommodation that would allow the Brotherhood that supports Morsi to compete in new elections. In other words, the Egyptian people are being exposed to the Muslim Brotherhood, and they're not dependent on our media to tell them what's going on. So they actually know, they actually understand what's going on. President Obama, quote, condemned the ongoing violence across Egypt and expressed concern over the continued political polarization. What does that even mean? What does that mean? Oh, I'm concerned. The president reiterated that the U.S. is not aligned with and does not support any particular Egyptian political party or group. John Kerry, U.S. Secretary of State, said, I'm sorry, I had to say that. John Kerry, U.S. Secretary of State, said in a separate statement that, quote, we firmly reject the unfounded and false claims by some in Egypt that the U.S. supports the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood or any specific Egyptian political party or movement. Still, according to the Bloomberg story, the administration has urged the Egyptian military to stop using what it calls heavy-handed tactics against the Brotherhood. They said the administration, these U.S. officials who ask not to be identified, which I am always very skeptical of, because how do you trust the reporter that they're telling you the truth? They said the administration is concerned that some in the military may want to provoke the Islamists to violence. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's so hard to do. It's really tough to provoke those Islamists to violence. It's so hard. It's just so, because they're such peace-loving people, those Islamists, you know. They just, you really have to, you know, it's like old Protestant grandmothers. You really have to go after them to get them to be violent. They said the administration may want to, that is, the Obama administration, is concerned that the military may want to provoke the Islamists to violence and then provide a rationale for crushing the movement once and for all. Such a move would fail and probably prompt a shift to an al-Qaeda-type terrorist tactics by extremists in the Islamist movement in Egypt and elsewhere, the U.S. officials say. So even while Israel is expressing hope that, even while Israel is expressing hope that the U.S. government has learned from its mistakes with the Muslim Brotherhood, it would appear both from the administration's track record and these unnamed sources within the U.S. government that, in fact, nothing has changed at all, and that this administration still maintains its naivete regarding the coup and or rebellion in Egypt. We've got a caller from Scranton. Welcome to the David Madeira Show. Oh, he's not on the air. Oh, okay. Doesn't want to go on the air. Oh, he wants to explain what did Cynthia mean when she said it wasn't a coup? So the reason it's not a coup, according to Cynthia's explanation, is that Morsi's government had violated the law. And this is what I've essentially been talking about for a very long time. A coup is when the military steps in and ousts a democratically elected a government. The problem is that, and the reason this is not to be seen as a coup, is that in the same way that the U.S., according to Cynthia and the reports that we're seeing from people who are there and participating in this, in the same way in the U.S. that the U.S. Declaration of Independence was not a coup, it was an expression of the lower and mid-level elected officials, the people who represented, who really represented the interests of the people and the rule of law. And that's the key distinction. If Morsi had taken actions which were consistent with the Constitution under which he was elected, then in fact he would be the duly elected and empowered president of that country. But the people of Egypt's position, people like Cynthia Farhat are taking the position that, look, he's not a legitimate president if he violates the law, if he doesn't respect the Constitution. And of course, the parallels are chilling because, you know, when you look at the Declaration of Independence, when you actually read the Declaration of Independence and you think about the things that it says, we posted this on the David Medeiros Show last Thursday, July 4th. We posted the grievances that were cited by the colonists in the Declaration of Independence as evidence for why they had to throw off the government. They said things like, the king won't approve laws passed by local elected legislative bodies that are necessary for the day-to-day operations of local government. Or the king will suspend them, this was the second complaint, until he could consider them, but never actually gets around to doing it. So in 1776, when our founding fathers signed the Declaration of Independence, they did so with a clear understanding that what they were doing was radical. What they were doing was going against the established government. But they laid out 27 reasons why that established government no longer deserved to be in power, and therefore it was within their natural rights, their God-given rights, to throw off that government and start fresh. And that's essentially what Cynthia is saying is going on in Egypt. That it's not a coup because the Egyptian people are saying, look, Morsi got elected under a very specific set of rules and then violated those rules, threw those rules out, and said, I am now the law. Whatever I say goes. And again, just a chilling comparison. I just read for you in an earlier hour about the 12 administrative messes about Obamacare. But each one of those represents an attempt by the government, by the Obama administration specifically, to essentially throw out the rules. The two things we got last week on Tuesday, we were told that the administration would, quote, delay. That's exactly what the second complaint was in the declaration, that the administration would delay the implementation of the employer mandate. And then on Friday, they said, look, we're going to not just delay the employer mandate, we're also going to use the honor system for anybody who wants to come and get government money, that is your money, my money, to pay for their health insurance. And so that's why Cynthia's position is that what's going on in Egypt, and I think I agree with her, what's going on in Egypt is not a coup because Morsi violated the rule of law and therefore forfeited his authority to rule. And then, of course, Cynthia went on to declare some of the other things, just like our founding fathers did in the Declaration of Independence. And I would encourage you to go over to the DMS.us and peruse those five posts that we put up. 2 minutes on the Declaration of Independence, and then I did the grievances for 3 days, and then concluded with lives, fortunes, and sacred honor. Because it is important to understand how America was born, because we are potentially watching in Egypt a similar process going on. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. This half hour, of course, being brought to you by grsrental.com, Grand Rental Station of DuPont and Scranton. They've got all kinds of equipment that you may need for your summer projects, whether it's a skid steer loader or an electric pavement breaker or just a generator to run a project in the woods. They've got it all. Why rent? Well, less time, less money, and less hassle. At Grand Rental Station, you rent the equipment and keep the advice. That's grsrental.com.
Giving you the other side of the story, David Madeira on 94.3 FM, The Talker. David Madeira on 94.3 FM, The Talker.
Welcome back, folks. 888-577-4487. We're talking about Egypt and what's going on over there. One of our callers wasn't sure they understood the whole concept of this not being a coup, why it isn't a violation of the rule of law. And of course, you know, that's debatable. The whole point is that this isn't clear. This is a difficult challenge. Unfortunately, it looks like the Obama administration doesn't really understand it any better than they did back when James Clapper, said that they were largely secular. James Clapper being, of course, the director of national intelligence, expressing back in 2009 the belief that this was a largely secular organization and that there was no reason to believe they would be involved in terrorism because they're basically a peaceful group. We're going to post links to all of those things on our Facebook page. On our show email, and you can get that by going to thedms.us. Head on over to thedms.us. You have to put the word the in there. It's thedms.us. And then in the upper right corner, there's a little red box that says sign up for email. Click on that. Put your email address in, and then every day at 10 o'clock, you'll get a link to an email with links to all of the show stories, all of the things that I referenced, like the 2-minute commentary that I did on the first seven grievances listed in the Declaration of Independence. All of that information will be at your fingertips, and you can review it and peruse it and understand it or argue it. And one of our listeners just emailed me something that has been on my mind, and in fact, I almost titled the blog post for the third hour this very thing. He says, "What we are seeing in Egypt might happen in the U.S. All three branches of government have failed the Constitution, the country, and the American citizens." And I agree with him. I do think that I do think he's right. I think that's the chilling thing about watching what's going on in Egypt and comparing it and paralleling it. When I started to do the work on the Declaration of Independence back in 2011, I made some comments during those 2-minute commentaries about the parallels to today. But since that time, especially since the second administration, the second term of Obama's administration, I feel those parallels are stronger than ever. If you look at those 27 grievances, it is not hard to draw a line between what they were saying. We just cited the first two, that local elected officials pass rules. And I think of an example here in northeastern Pennsylvania, where you have overreaching government. Now, this is not a criticism just of the Obama administration. I want to be very clear about this, as is our listener who just wrote me that email. This is every level of the federal government, every branch of the federal government. Is using the laws right now. The folks in Wayne County are having a difficult time exercising their property rights because the federal government, because a consortium of local governments, actually, it's the Delaware River Basin Commission, DRBC, has put a hold, a moratorium on the development of those natural resources. And they're a quasi-government agency formed by the agreement of several governments that are depriving the American citizens of their rights. And the collapse of the people's rights through these both federal and quasi-government agencies, what has been called the fourth branch of government, the bureaucracy, is stunning in its scope. And what the president does or says is really minor, really quite minor compared to the oppression, the loss of rights that the American people suffer. And they are responding. They are taking action in New York. One of the companies that makes guns in New York, Carr Arms, is moving to Pennsylvania because the environment in New York is not welcoming to the manufacture and use of guns, self-defense weapons. And so the American people are voting with their feet. The question is, you know, is it too late? And what will the government do as it sees its power slipping away? I also wanted to just call something to your attention. This was in the Daily Caller today, and I think it's important. Gasland 2 is beginning to get some traction. And one of the things that came out was that in this this film, Gasland 2, one of the stories that is being used, one of the footage there, there's a sequel to Gasland. One of the features is a scene where a Texas landowner is able to light the contents of his garden hose on fire. And then the documentary uses this ability to light the hose on fire as evidence that nearby oil and gas operations are causing the contamination. But here's the truth. A Texas court has ruled that the scene was a hoax concocted by an environmental activist engaged in a prolonged battle with a local gas company. The environmentalist sought to inflate the dangers of fracking, but Texas 43rd Judicial District Court found last year that the Texas landowner, under the advice and direction of an environmental activist, Alyssa Rich, quote, intentionally attached a garden hose to a gas vent, not a water line, and then lit it on fire. So, yeah, his garden hose shot flames because he hooked it up to a gas line. The demonstration, quote, this is according to the court, this demonstration was not done for scientific study, but to provide local and national news media a deceptive video calculated to alarm the public into believing the water was burning. The ruling was in response to a defamation complaint brought by the gas company, Range Resources, which has fracking operations in the area. According to the Free Beacon, Rich, the environmentalist, worked with the Environmental Protection Agency to issue an endangerment order against Range Resources. The order was then withdrawn once the agency could not prove that local water pollution came from gas and oil operations. Gasland 2, of course, is the sequel to the Oscar-nominated 2010 anti-fracking film Gasland, and it is premiering, or it premiered Monday night. The first Gasland showed scenes of people near fracking operations being able to light up their tap water, but that was also criticized as misleading. And if you want to get a perspective on this, if you want to get a better perspective on this, I mean, go see Gasland too, but know that this is the first of many revelations that I've become aware of how Gasland 2 is using video that they know to be fraudulent, or they certainly have reason to know since there's a court order declaring it so. They know to be fraudulent, but they're using it anyway. Go see Frack Nation and check out, which was filmed in large part here in northeastern Pennsylvania, and find out the truth about America's natural resources. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Live from Northeast PA, it's David Madeira on 94.3 FM, The Talker.